So I'm going to start and say some things which I've noted before. I constantly apologize for this, that my shiurim just become kind of like a run-on sentence from previous years, and I'm kind of building on other things. But I am going to go to places that I haven't gone before, because there's a particular question that I want to deal with, which I think I've assumed otherwise. So let me start, and then I will identify the question as we go. So the good thing about Yaakov leaving is finally both of his parents, who there's been a great deal of dysfunctionality, finally they're telling to do the same thing. There's a really interesting comment in Chazal when it talks about the Ben Sarah Morad, the kid who is himself quite problematic, that he didn't listen to Kol Ava Ve'imo. So there Chazal say that in order to be Ben Sarah Morad, there has to be one voice, Kol Ava Ve'imo. I mean, they exaggerate that a little bit, but what it really means is, again, on the base level, is that if you come from a family which is itself dysfunctional, where the father says one thing and the mother says something else, so what did you expect of the child? So over here, Yaakov's parents have always spoken with very different voices, which means his mother has one vision based upon her vision, based upon a nevuah, and Yitzchak has a whole other vision for what the family ended up being. So over here, both of them told him to go, but for different purposes. His mother said, run away because your brother wants to kill you, while his father said, oh, go and find a wife. So It sounds, again, on face value, it really is the same thing. Probably the duration of the trip would be very different between one and the other, that to find a wife, again, this is at least a theoretical, should not take that much time, but if it's until your brother calms down, that's possibly going to be a long time. She also says, until I send for you, so maybe we'll get to that also. Did she ever send for him? I believe yes, but I have to try to prove that also, but we'll see if we get there. So v'yetzi Yaakov b'Yerushov yelech harana. Now, the other thing is that Yaakov has been involved in what some people could claim has been some morally questionable behavior going back, again, throughout last week's parsha, which means when we get to Yaakov now, part of what we should be doing is pausing and saying, well, you know, what is Yaakov's religious state? Which means, essentially, there are those who can claim, and I've heard those who do, and I think that they're overstating it, that Yaakov is a morally compromised individual. Well, my first response to that is, and God speaks to him. That's really important. Of course, you could tell me, well, God speaks to Paro and God, yeah, but it's a very different speech. God speaks to him, and he blesses him, and he gives him, and that's really what we need to focus on. He gives him some very particular blessings. So let's continue. V'yetzi Yaakov b'Yerushov yelech harana. V'yifka b'makom v'yalon sham. Notice the word makom. It's going to be used multiple times. V'yifka b'makom v'yalon sham. Kiva Hashemesh. V'yikach me'avnei ha'makom. V'yasomi roshotav. V'yishka b'makom mahu. So it sounds like the place is a place of significance. Part of this, if I have to now go back to the two different missions of his father and of his mother, The one of his mother is run for your life. This sounds actually much more like a run for your life experience, because he's not very well prepared. He doesn't have a place to stay. He runs out of daylight. He ends up having to sleep on the side of the road. And this is not like the kind of trip that you booked all your hotels beforehand, and everything is set and everything is clear. And I'll say it again. I know that the two sent him on the same, it's the same path, but the duration will be different, and maybe the leaving is different, and we'll pause at that. V'yichalom, and he dreams. V'hinei sulam utzav arz v'rosha magia shemayma. We'll pause in the middle of the pasuk. And he dreams, and he sees a sulam. I will note again that usulam is only used once in the entire Tanakh. So our assumption that it means ladder may be more based upon Ben Yehuda than it is based upon what this really means over here, which means you can now claim it's any kind of structure that has its feet on the ground and heads in the sky, which is the same terminology which was used when they were building a tower going up to heaven. So what exactly is the sulam? Well, today we know what a sulam is, but in terms of context of the Torah, this is the only context, again, in all of Tanakh, so therefore there is some guesswork. And what we tend to do in cases like this is we work backwards. We know the modern meaning, and we just kind of ascribe the modern meaning on the original meaning, which I'll say again, all that I really know about is that it's on the ground up in the clouds, which to a certain extent may be a metaphor for Yaakov himself. of somebody who needs to be involved both in the physical and the spiritual, especially if you follow Yaakov as being an individual who's a man of the tents, and now he needs to leave the tents, which theoretically, at least, I'm not convinced, we'll see about that more, at least at this point, theoretically, the tents are what we're told by Chazal, that it's a place of learning and place of Torah, and it's really tents are like Avraham's tents, it's a place of chesed, it is more of a spiritual experience as opposed to the life of Esav, and that's part of what's going to take place with Yaakov, is that he steals Esav's brachot and he ends up getting Esav's life as well to a very great extent. But over here, this combination for Yaakov will be having feet on the ground and having his head up in the clouds. So it continues, and then it says, "V'hinei malchei Elokim olim v'yordim bo." And what's very important over here is that the malachim. And by the way, I've asked this many times to students without looking in. And I say, don't look in, but tell me what you remember. Are the angels going down and going up, or going up and going down? And whenever they guess, they always get it wrong, because who would have thought that angels start down here on earth? Who would have thought that angels go up and then come down? You would have thought that angels come down and then go up. And so there is something that really needs to be understood. If you imagine, like the Mishnah will tell us, that angels are created every single time a person does a mitzvah, so angels go up and go down, could very well be that Yaakov's behavior till this point creates these angels which go up and then come down, so therefore there may be a message over here about responsibility, which again we're going to gently place aside. The more important part is what happens afterwards, because it's far more dramatic, even though till this point that sounds dramatic, and it says that Vihine Hashem Nitzav Alav, and God appears. Meaning, any appearance of God is going to be more dramatic than just of a proxy, like an angel. Vayomar, and God says, Ani Hashem, Elokei Avraham Avicha, Elokei Yitzchak, Ha'aretz Asher Tov Shechav Aleha Lachat Nenu Ulazarecha. So this is very confirming, because God says to him that blessing which his father Yitzhak had previously given to him, that you're going to receive the land of Israel, God confirms you are going to get this land that you're lying on. But again, recognize the irony of this. He's being promised the land, but nonetheless he's being chased out of the land. He's being promised the land, but all that he has is he's sleeping on the ground. Which means sometimes you would imagine that ownership would mean wealth as well. But with Yaakov, all of this is, as of this point at least, all based upon the future, and it's not something which is happening at this particular point. And of course, the continuation then is not only you, etnena ulizarecha, and for your children, which is a wonderful thing to say, of course, for one problem. What is that? That he has no children at this point. So over here, Yaakov is lying on the ground, he's receiving these blessings, and I'm going to say it again, this part is wonderful, not so much for Yaakov, but also for Yaakov, but for us. Because in case we did not know what to do with those earlier scenes of Yaakov, you now realize that everything that Yaakov was doing, and I'm overplaying my hand, and I'm admitting this now, that everything that Yaakov did is based upon his mother's prophecy. His mother receives a prophecy. She loves Yaakov. She tells Yaakov about the prophecy. And that then informs everything that he does. And therefore, instead of saying that Yaakov is morally questionable in terms of his behavior, Yaakov is doing things based upon something which is prophetic, upon the will of God, how he understands it. And now God essentially confirms, or does he? And it's at this point that I have to hesitate a little bit. And it continues in terms of the children issue. And it says, "V'yeh zarachak afar aretz ufaratz the yam of a kedva v'tzvon of a negva." And adding one more. Okay, so you can have all these children bursting forth in every way, and then "V'nivrchu v'cha kol mishpachot adama v'zaracha," and everyone will be blessed through you. I want to just stop here for a second and go back to source number 3. And over here, it's when Yitzchak does tell Yaakov to run away and go. Not to run away, but to find a wife. Source 3 is, Vayikra Yitzchak al Yaakov, Yavarechoto, Yitzavehu, Vayomer, Lotikach Isha Mibinot Kanan, Kum Lech Padana Aram, right? Go and find a wife, Kachacham Isha Mibinot Lavanachi Imecha, Vikel Shakai Yavarechotcha, Vierfrucha Vierbecha, Vitel Kalamim, which is essentially the same bracha that God is giving him, Vitel Chabrikat Avraham, Lacha Ulazarecha Itach, Lerash Lachet Eretz Mugurecha, Shanatan Elokim Avram, essentially giving the brach of Avram. So that God is repeating to him. Essentially, we ended last week's parsha with Yaakov being sent away, getting this bracha. And this is not when he's dressed up as Esav. This is, he knows it's Yaakov. He sends him to find a wife, and he gives him this really important blessing, and God now confirms this blessing. I'll just comment by saying that the assumption that Yitzchak never left Israel, and moreover, that he was commanded never to leave Israel, is an overstatement. I know that midrashically it's true. You just find it where it says it in the text, that he was commanded never to leave Israel. That's not the case. He was told not to go to Egypt. He was not commanded never to leave Israel. And we do tend to overplay that particular hand. The other issue is that then he goes and lives in Eretz Plishtim, which I'm not completely convinced that Eretz Plishtim is part of Israel. So therefore, the argument Yitzhak never left is a really good argument midrashically, but then you actually look in the psukim, it's not as clear. The larger question over here is, why is Yaakov told to go to this particular place to get a wife? Is that it seems to be the lesser of two evils, not that he was telling him to live someplace else. And even halachically, this is something that one is allowed to do. One is allowed to go to Chutz Laretz to find oneself the spouse. Is that the real issue is, it goes all the way back to Parshat Noach. It's the children of Ham versus the children of Shem. And over here, he's really being told, you can't marry any of the children of Ham. And if you want to throw into the curse on top of all of that, and if you want to find an appropriate spouse, then you need to go and find somebody from the children of Shem, which is essentially what he's telling him to do. So therefore, when you're talking about blessings and curses, and you're only looking at it geographically, that's not the whole story. Because there's also blessings and curses in terms of geography. Now, one other thing which is interesting. The land that Avram was promised is all the way up to the Euphrates. Who said that he ever left Israel? Okay. Eretz Yisrael Hashlema. If you're already going to give me the Zionist argument, I will out-Zionist you. Yeah, and you didn't see that coming, did you? No, but what you did is really interesting, is that you took the Midrashic and you read it into the text, and then you assumed it as an axiom, and then the question becomes, you know, very clear. But I'm just saying every step along the way is not necessarily the case. I didn't say ignore. I said understand. Okay, so then God continues... And by the way, I would even argue that Yaakov's leaving on the Rivka side is also based upon a prophecy. Again, how specific and how, I don't know, but if you look at source 2, I unfortunately start a Pasuk Membet, Vayugad l'Rivka. What's the Pasuk beforehand? The Pasuk beforehand is Vayomar Esav Belibo. That's more or less, I don't know if I'm quoting it exactly. Esav said to himself, as soon as my father's dead, I'm going to kill him. By the way, the more cynical interpretation of that is that when my father's dead, I'm going to kill him. Why? So you would say because he has mitzvah kibbutz and he doesn't want to. No, he doesn't want to sit shiva twice. That once his father dies, then he'll kill his brother so that he doesn't have to sit shiva. So that's the more cynical interpretation. What? That's very cynical. Yes, it also makes all kinds of assumptions. But over here, Vayugad l'Rivka, who told Rivka? How could Rivka be told this if Esav said this to himself? So this also may be yet another, there are multiple ones, indication of Rivka's prophecy. So her telling him to go is based upon something which she understands prophetically. She also, let's go back and look at 2, and she says to him, you know, he wants to kill you. Pasuk Mem Gimel. You never can trust anyone from this family when they talk about time. I mean, these are the original Israelis, another 5 minutes and so on. Yamim achadim, we have no idea how much time it is. Ad asher tashuv chamat achicha, until your brother calms down. Ad shuv af achicha mimcha v'shachachat. I just don't know how long that's going to take till he actually forgets that. And then I'll send for you and bring you back from there. So again, that's, I think, a fair question. Did she ever send for him? Okay, so let's go back to source number 1, because it continues and it says, in Pasuk Tedvav, God says, V'nei anochi imach, u'shmarticha b'kol asher telech, Vashivoticha el adama hazot. So again, just parallel that with what Rivka said. Rivka said, I'm going to bring you back. And now God says, I'm going to bring you back. So therefore, this, meaning Yitzchak's mission is not one that we're as concerned about him getting back. It's like, yeah, you find a wife and get back. I mean, it kind of should parallel the Eved Avram or the Eliezer mission. But over here, you know, what God is talking about here is probably much closer to the Rivka instructions, then, you know, you're going to go, but I'm going to bring you back, and I'm going to take care of you, right? Ki lo azvacha ad asher im asiti et asher dibarti lach. Right? I will take care of everything. I'll guard you along the way. I'll take care of you. I'll bring you back, and don't worry. So Yikatz Yaakov Mishnato V'yomer Chen Yesh Hashem B'makom Hazeh. Going back to the makom that we saw in multiple places, which is why Chazal are going to now guess what this makom may be. V'nochi lo yodati. He's saying, you know, I just lie. And again, he ran out of sunlight, so he had to lie down. V'yira, and he was afraid. V'yomer Manu Ra Makom Hazeh Inza Ki Im Beit Elokim V'zeh Shar Hashemayim. V'shkem Yaakov B'boker V'yikach Et Ha'Even Asher Sam Yirashotav. Now, I just want to pause for a second. When we do interpretations, we tend to do something which is relatively easier, although not always easy, and that is we interpret what it says. There is a second thing which is far more difficult, and that is to interpret what it doesn't say. Because, and when I say that to you, then you have to look at me like I'm a little crazy and say, well, how are we supposed to know what it doesn't say? Well, Yaakov knows what it doesn't say. And I'll just put that out there. Yaakov knows what God said, and he also knows, and he hears very loudly what God didn't say. So let's just exaggerate all this a little bit. Yaakov runs away. Yaakov had just now received a bracha. But that wasn't the only bracha that Yaakov had received. Yaakov also received a different bracha. The other bracha, when he was dressed up as Esav. And when he's dressed up in Esav, God gives him this wonderful bracha. God doesn't repeat that bracha to him. Which means when you're Yaakov and now God appears to you, that's great. And God says things to you, that's great. And God blesses you, that's great. But you listen very carefully what he said. And I'm going to say it again now. Yaakov also notices what he didn't say. Again, he dresses up as Esav and he takes this bracha. And that bracha was one of power over your brother. And that was one of wealth. And he doesn't hear that at all. Rather, God is saying, I'm going to take care of you. But he doesn't say that you're going to, you know, have power and wealth. Which then creates this just wonderful irony, and that is that Yaakov is running away because Esav wants to kill him for a bracha, which isn't even going to help him. So then you realize, again, to a certain extent, the absurdity of the situation that we're in right now, and you again have to ask yourself, so, like, what was the divine purpose in all of this? Because God seems to approve, but there's not complete approval. So it's, again, what's more interesting to me, I don't want to say more, what's equally interesting to me is not just what God says, but also what God doesn't say, and I'm going to say that again now. We should hear very loudly what God doesn't say, because that seems to be quite significant. What I'm saying is, let's hesitate, let's listen, that there is something taking place over here. I'm pretty convinced that I did not need to explain this to Yaakov. Yaakov understood this point perfectly well. And it's certainly going to be a subtext of things which are going to be taking place further. Again, you want me to exaggerate this whole point? When Yaakov shows up, you know, by the family of Lavan, you have to compare that to when the Eved Avram shows up. The Eved Avram shows up with 10 camels on a moving jewelry store, right? He shows up with nothing. Again, you just have to compare those two scenes. And Yaakov ends up becoming enslaved, and then you have to ask yourself, well, does he particularly mind this? And I think the answer is no, because he's got no place else to go. I mean, Yaakov being homeless over here is going to be part of the Yaakov situation for a fairly long time. And as I said, again, I just want to pause there and to see what's here, because, again, I don't want to say there's no doubt, but there's little doubt in my mind that Yaakov's response to this whole experience, what he says right afterwards, keep in mind of the blessing that he receives, which isn't repeated, and what he says. Right afterwards, again, it says he gets up in the morning, right, we need shemen because Chanukah is coming. By the way, don't think that there aren't commentaries who will go back to this scene and say, oh, here we see shemen, and make a whole Chanukah drush out of this, right? Especially in Hasidic writings, yeah. Unless it was situation. And never underestimate the power somebody will have to show off to a girl.
I'll
say one more thing that you don't want to hear is that if this was Esav, you wouldn't have been surprised at all. No. Just remember that these are twins, which of course we would like to assume that they're fraternal twins, because you'll say that it's impossible that they're identical twins, but there may be far more Esav and Yaakov than we sometimes imagine. But let's leave that, because I actually have a response to you. I'll let you know when I say it, but no, I'm not saying it yet. Okay, so we have to, things have to be done in the proper sequence. So what he continues and then he says is Vayidor Yaakov Neder Lemor Yimi Elokim Imadi V'Shmorani B'Derech Hazeh Asher Anochi Aleich. Basic repeating what God just now said. You know, God, if you do take care of me, but right, V'Natani Lechem Lechol Beged Lavosh. The Yaakov's response is essentially asking for the absolute minimum. Please let me have, you know, clothing on my back and put bread on my plate. He's not talking about wealth and he's not talking about power, which means Yaakov, I'm going to say it again now, he seems to hear very clearly what God doesn't say, right? You like that? He seems to hear very clearly what God doesn't say and responds to what God doesn't say is, okay, there's a new reality and this bracha which I stole, which I now have to run away for and is not helping me at all, and rather God, you know, take care of me. And then he continues, V'shavti b'shalom o'beit avi v'ya Hashem li l'elokim. And if you let me turn back to the Beit Avi, I want to stress the Beit Avi, to my father's home, then you will be for God in what sense? V'evan azot asher samti matzeva y'beit elokim. Right, you let me get back to Beit Avi, I will build for you a Beit Elokim. And anything you give me, I'm going to give you 10%. But Yaakov's only talking about even getting a really minimal, and he's responding to his whole situation as these are not all the words of somebody who's absolutely convinced that he's been blessed with power and wealth. It's rather the words of somebody who's much more desperate, and as I said, I'm pretty convinced that Yaakov is responding to God's silence. Oh, it had effect. Esav didn't get it. But if you would now ask me at this point if what Rivka's objective was, I would assume that Rivka's objective was that as it is, Esav is going to be powerful and dominant and so on, let's take from him any more than he could possibly have had. I'm going to leave it at that for now. But if you say, what was the purpose? Perhaps that makes at least some sense. I'm now going to skip a whole bunch of information. Just again to make sure, source number 4 is the bracha that he takes, and I'll say it again. Vayitin lecha Elokim itala shemayim mishmanei aretz v'rov dagon v'tirosh. Again, all kinds of produce. Yavducha amim v'yishtachav lecha le'umim v'yigvir la'achecha v'yishtachav lecha b'nei imecha. That you're going to be powerful of your brother, and so on. And then you can say, again, even more so based upon your comment, will you tell me that Yaakov ever got this through history? I mean, was this our, maybe in the future still, but this doesn't seem to have ever worked. And again, let's pause with that now. I do, however, now want to skip, you know, all the interesting parts of the parasha and go to the part that I always try to avoid because I have no idea what's going on. And that's when we get to Yaakov, his leaving of Lavan. And let's again skip source number 5 to source number 5, Perek Lamed, Pasuk Kafei. V'yikasher yodar Rachel et Yosef, v'yom Yaakov v'Lavan shlacheni v'elcha el mikomi ularzi. That when Yosef is born, now Yaakov says, ah, it's time to go. It's time for me to go home. T'na et nashai bet yiladai, Asher avadati otcha bahen va'alecha, ki ata yadata et avodoti asher avadaticha. By the way, the word avodah is used in that pasuk 3 different times. So just like we had in the very beginning, makom, now, you know, the place has been replaced by avodah, and avodah could either be work or it can actually be stronger than work. It could be servitude as well, and I say that deliberately. Vayomer elav Lavan, nichashti. Now that's a very important word over here. Nichush is very often understood as something which is in the realm of magic, black magic, and so on. Nichashti v'yarchenu Hashem biglalacha. He says, it seems to me, based upon my divination, that the blessing of God. Now notice, Lavan is not a monotheist. Lavan is a polytheist who just now in the same sentence spoke about divination, but he also understands that there is this God of Avraham, and he sees that this unnatural success which has followed Yaakov along the way. Now, just pause there for a moment. We may never have thought about this really, but this which is noticed by Lavan was previously noticed by Avimelech in terms of Yitzchak, and will later on be noticed by everybody in terms of Yosef, is that they have this divine blessing. Now, by Yosef, I think we all noted, because so many people say it to him, But I don't know, you know, in this like little half a pasuk over here, we notice that in that sense, Yosef is really following Yaakov. And as I pointed out with Avimelech, you see these people who don't necessarily believe in God know that God is with this person. So you have now a really interesting continuation over here, Shalshelet. You have this Yitzchak follows into Yaakov and the blessing. So over here, and now you realize what I'm doing, reading between the lines, that this blessing of Yitzchak, and by the way, very specifically, having to do with finance, not spiritual world, right? That was Yitzchak's Mea Sha'arim, right? It was 100 times over what it should have been. That actually now has come over to Yaakov, and an observer standing on the outside who knows what normal work should produce is watching this and saying that I understand that this is really some kind of a divine blessing which is upon you. Now, you all, even though I haven't said it, you all now know where I'm going with this, is that even though I just spent all this time saying in the beginning of the parasha that God doesn't say anything about the blessing, and nonetheless we see, as we're going to move now towards the end of the parasha, that Yaakov is going to become extremely wealthy along the way. So part of what I'm trying now to figure out are, you know, what exactly is the connection between, is there a connection to these things? What are the various possibilities of understanding this? And I'm going to give you multiple possibilities. But as I said, just now what I did is in really broad strokes, and now we could continue. Tell me what, you know, whatever wages you want. Now Yaakov is also recognizing that God has blessed you over here because of all the work that I've done. So now I think everybody's clear in all of this. God is in the picture, which means God, who can bless also somebody's bank account, has been blessing somebody's bank account over here. Now, till now, the person who's actually the beneficiary of all of this is Lavan. Now, of course, the drama is going to be how all of this is going to shift over to Yaakov. So essentially, we need now to empty out Lavan's bank account and move over to Yaakov's bank account. Now, if I can actually give you the formula to do that, we would all be better off. But first, we'll have to now note what it is that happens. And then it continues. And, you know, what should I give you? And how should I pay you? And how we continue. And it's at this point we get to the part that I've always skipped because I have no idea what's going on. It's the Seh, and it's the Chum, and the Ksavim, and the Izim, and it's going to be the black and the stripes and the white and the this and this. And I have no idea what's going on. And I've seen people with degrees in biology try to write about this and try to explain this and so on. And the truth is, I would hesitate. Now, I do want to point something out. Now, I'm going back to that Yaakov was just an Ish Ohalim, which with actually a question, and that is, I know what you know, what we've all been told. Now, if you want, I can be more sinister, and I can say, I know how we've all been indoctrinated, that what Ish Ohalim means is that he's just been sitting in yeshiva. So I just want to start with that by saying, you know that Yaakov wasn't really sitting in yeshiva. When it says that Esav is a hunter, and Yaakov is an Ish, right, Yoshev Ohalim, that doesn't really mean he was sitting in yeshiva at that point. I know you can tell me that's what Rashi says. So I'm not saying Rashi's wrong. I'm not saying that at all. But I still would like to know what Pshat is in what it means. So let's start by looking at source 6. Vayigdlu ha-ne'arim, v'esav ish yodei yatzayit, ish yodei v'yaakov ishtam yoshev ohalim. So there is, certainly is a contrast over here between the two. One is a hunter, one's an ishtam. One is an ishtadeh, one is yoshev ohalim. The Rashbam, now Rashbam is our favorite go-to in terms of pshat. So you know the Rashbam's not going to say that he was sitting in yeshiva. Right, you just know he's not going to say that. But what does he say? Yoshev Olim ro'et son aviv. He was a shepherd. Kimosha pirashti etzel Yoshev ohel omikne. As I've previously explained, and he says, take a look back in Perek Dalet. Okay, let's go back to Perek Dalet, source number 8. Vitelet ada et yoval, hu haya avi Yoshev ohel omikne. So therefore, ohel is connected to mikne in this case. Rashi explains, that's actually far more important now. Rashi's explanation there is, he was the first nomadic Yoshev Ohalim, somebody who sits in tents. Now, what does Yoshev Ohalim mean? Chodesh Kan, V'chodesh kan b'shvil mar'eit sono. U'kishakaleh ha'mir'e b'makom zeh, holech v'tokei aholo b'makom acher. So what does Yoshev Ohel mean? Now you can argue with me if you want and say, no, that's Yoshev Ohel u'mikne. And it's only the mikne at the end which informs the Ohel. The Rashbam is not going for that at all. He's saying, no, what did Yaakov do? I mean, he had to do something. Are you going to just tell me he sat in the tents all the time? And maybe that's what Rashi's point is. Ah, that's Ohel and not Ohel v'mikne. But the Rashbam is saying, what are you talking about? The Yoshev Ohalim, in the plural, is the person who moves the tents from place to place. That's what shepherds do, is you move from place to place in order to find the place to graze a month or two here, a month there. And therefore, it's a nomadic experience of going place to place. It also makes it a little more interesting, Yaakov's existence as somebody who's a little bit more nomadic and maybe a little bit less tied to the home, and Yaakov sleeping on the road maybe is not as traumatic as I had suggested originally. But I am trying to get to another point. You know, we kind of imagine that Yaakov is just exactly as he said, he's a yeshiva boy, and how can a yeshiva boy open up this thing and have any experience with wells and know what he's doing at all? Well, I'll skip the well part, but maybe he was more clever in terms of the outside world than we sometimes recognize. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the indication over here. A professional. Yaakov, according to what the Rashbam is telling us, has far more experience as a shepherd than we ever recognized before. And when he goes in, he says to Lavan, okay, you know, you want to decide my wages? Let me go, which means this could be an old shepherd's trick over here in order to, which means it's not that Yaakov is walking into this as this completely naive amateur. Rather, Yaakov is walking as a professional, which really does change the story a little bit. But I'm saying all of this because I think it's important, but he was because he worked the first month for free. The first month he gets there and he just takes over the shepherding, and then he goes, oh, you know, what can I give you as your wages? Yaakov knew what he was doing when he takes over the shepherding. It's not like he never did it before. And I know this changes the whole story a little bit, but what can I do? We're taking the Rashbam and we're trying to understand the implication of this Rashbam. The Chizkuni, by our Pasuk, writes in Source 11, Yoshev Ohalim, about Yaakov, Lefi Pshuto Ohalim Sheltson, Kamo Aviv. Yoshev Oel Mikne, Ulafisha Tidlo Moshaya Roa Etson Lavan, Kadam Ulam Decha, Shematola Rotson. It says, no. It's the Chizkuni's point is exactly your point. It's saying the Torah is telling you now that he was a shepherd for you not to be surprised later on when he becomes a shepherd, not becomes, when he performs as a shepherd by Lavan, because you already knew that he was a shepherd. And isn't this fascinating that none of us note this, because we're all so convinced that the Pshat is that he sat in yeshiva. But again, these various Balei HaTosfot, the Rashbam, the Chizkuni, are all telling, and they all know Rashi. The Rashbam, right? I say this every time. The Rashbam learned Chumash with Rashi, right? Literally with Rashi, with the man, his grandfather. He learned Chumash with Rashi. He knows Rashi better than we know Rashi, right? He ate lunch with Rashi. He had dinner with Rashi. He learned Chumash with Rashi. He learned Gemara with Rashi. He knew Rashi, and nonetheless, but you want me to tell you Pshat? This is a pshat, and this Chizkuni is just tying the dots exactly like you did, and said, pay attention, this is like a little foreshadowing, and we don't catch it because we've been indoctrinated. Okay, so now we have a little bit more understanding about where we're up to, and let's go to source number 12. And this is after Yaakov did whatever it is that he did, and it's going to now cause me to pull back on what I've already kind of suggested, because what I've kind of suggested is that Yaakov was not walking into this, you know, as naive and as, you know, as an amateur. He actually knew much more than he was doing, and all that I think is true. I think all that is pshat, but then something else is going to happen. Yeah, Yaakov now manipulates the entire system, and now again his bank account gets filled up, or his sheep account gets filled up. But now v'yishma et divrei b'nei Lavan lemor lakach Yaakov et kol asher la'avinu. Now, this doesn't necessarily contradict what was said beforehand. Lavan recognizes that all the blessing comes from Yaakov, and over here they see, it's almost like they're not looking at that part of it, they're looking at the other side of it. Yaakov took everything which is our father's. But, you know, Lavan already admitted, but everything that belonged to their father actually was there because of Yaakov, or at least substantially so. U'me'asher Lavinu asa et kol ha'kavod hazeh, v'yar Yaakov et p'nei Lavan v'hinei einenu imo ketmol shilshon. And Lavan himself was not now, he was no longer treating him in the same way. V'yomar Hashem el Yaakov, shuv el eretz avotecha u'mladetecha v'yeimach. time to go back. Now, again, we don't know. We don't know in terms of, just think back to Rivka. Rivka said, I'll send you a message. So did Rivka send the message? Oh, by the way, is this the message? I don't know if you ever thought about this. I'll send you a message, and that's God telling him, yeah, it's time to go back. This is, what?
Time to leave,
which means this is the message. There is actually somebody else who likely was sent. Good. And here he tells, I don't know if you ever mentioned to them before that I've had, you know, this divine visitation, but you know, and God has been with me. You know, I worked diligently. And your father abused me, and he changed my wages all the time. And God did not allow for me to be abused, you know, I want to say continually, which is really interesting, because to a very great extent, what Yaakov is now doing is he's going back and telling us not just about what God said to him now, but this goes back to the vision that we had when he was leaving, where God says, don't worry, I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to guard you in this entire time. And again, the whole thing with the Nikudim, you'll do Kotzon Nikudim. This was God. I mean, this is very important, because just in case we think that it was Yaakov really manipulating. No, Yaakov is telling him, can I tell you the secret of how all this happened? All of this was God. Now, this is interesting because Yaakov is saying that this now is really a divine blessing. And it was God who did this, God who saved it, and God who gave it over to me. And now he's telling over, and I had a dream. And now Yaakov is saying, "Oh, this whole thing about the spots and the stripes and whatever." He's saying, "Oh, all that came to me in a dream." Or, again, just like I said a moment ago, that maybe when Rivka says, "Oh, God, I'll send a message to you," it's God who's doing it. Whose idea was this? This whole thing. This was all essentially Yaakov is saying, "Yeah, this was all part of a prophecy." Where God told me this is what to do. Vayomar elai malach Elokim, just in case you think I've been overstating this, and a malach said to me, Bachalom Yaakov yom hineni, Vayomar sana inechu re'e kol atudim olim alatzon, akudim nukudim uvurdim, ki re'iti et kol asher levano selach. Yeah, this is a divine, what's the word, that God is getting involved in this in order to protect Yaakov from being taken advantage. But it's more than just being taken advantage of. It's much more than that. Anochi hakel beit Kel or Beit El, Asher Mashachta Shamat Seva, Asher Nadarta Li Sham Neder, Ata Kum Tsemina Aretz Azot Vashuvel Eretz Meladatecha. Essentially, God is saying to him, or the angel is saying to him, God is sending the angel, by saying, yeah, this was part of what just took place, what I say just took place, at least 20 years have gone by, that, yeah, I've kept my side of it and I've protected it all along the way, and now it's time for you to go back home. And again, what Rivka's side in all of this, I think, is interesting. And then Rachel and Leah, they respond, you know, and what about all of our father's wealth? And essentially, what Yaakov responds in saying is that, you know, everything is by us now, and you don't have to worry about getting anything from your father. And it's at that point that they go, Pasuk Yud-Chet, V'nehig et kol mikneu, v'et kol rechusho asher rachash mikne kinyano, asher rachash b'padan aram, levo o Yitzhak aviv arza kanan. And now we are heading back home, heading back home to Yitzchak. And by the way, it doesn't say anything about Rivka. Is Rivka, has she already passed? Does he even know that she passed? Did somebody come and give a message already about this? And we never hear of Rivka again after she had sent Yaakov. Now notice the Radak. Radak writes, Vayatzel, if you remember that, God save me, Inyan hasarau shlila, lefishahu gozelo to you, machlif miskorati, lefichach haya me'etakel, vayu lodot rovatzon miskorati. Because God took it, because Lavan had taken advantage, God had to steal it. And v'chein, hareini hakel, b'chalom lo deina ki me'ito, niyadavar hazev, lo derech mikre. This was not just a question of chance, this was God did this. Ki haya mashgiach, that it is God who is protecting those who are being taken advantage of. Now, there's something interesting about this, because he is saying it's God, but he didn't add in any part of, and this is part of God's promise, I'll take care of you. Rather, this seems to be much more local, that God is getting involved in history because there's an individual who's being taken advantage of by his boss, and therefore God is going to try to correct the wrong over here. The Ayelet HaShachar, that's Rabbi Aryeh Lev Steinman, the Yetzel Elokim et Megnei Avichem, Tzarech Bira. This needs to be explained. Yaakov Avad V'Kibel B'Scharo et Amegio. Yaakov did get his wages. Now, that, I'm not sure how simple it is. V'lom Ezeh Nechshav Shefrish Me'Avim V'Natan Lo. So, meaning, what exactly is taking place? Again, the reason I'm citing this is much more because of, is Yaakov here getting what he deserves, or is he getting much more than we would have thought? Just give me 1 second. Yeah. We're going to skip a little bit and go down to the Ibn Ezra in 18. V'yatzel Elokim kita'am v'yinatzlu et Mitzrayim v'shneim migzerat hatzilenina v'imhu ma'at rechok zeshe amar Yaakov l'nashav gam hu emet. So, something really interesting happened over here in this Ibn Ezra. First of all, he's creating a parallel. He's saying, Vayatzel Elokim, God saved me, is just like Vayinatzlu, saying it's the same word, et Mitzrayim. What is Vayinatzlu et Mitzrayim? That's when they go and they borrow all the things, and they empty out, you know, the closets and the houses and the so on, and they take all the wealth of Egypt with them. So, those of you who don't know, there is a shir that I gave a bunch of years ago, based upon a teaching of the Vilna Gaon, who essentially creates a parallel between Yaakov leaving Lavan and Am Yisrael leaving Mitzrayim. And the Vilna Gaon goes so far as to say that every element about these two stories are connected to one another. So if you want, I can give the shir again on Bishalach, but that's really what the Vilna Gaon, he lines up every, and he says, look, every single thing. So over here, this Ibn Ezra is actually supportive, at least of one little snapshot of this, by saying, oh, meaning what I'm really getting at, it's not random that of all events in history that he went to Egypt, that Yaakov leaving Lavan and taking all the wealth with him is actually parallel to when Am Yisrael are going to leave Egypt, they're going to take the wealth with him. Now, if you want, you can say, well, Yaakov was enslaved, and look at the word avdut that was used multiple times, and look at on the other hand, that Am Yisrael were enslaved. You could say this is what they deserved, or you can say that no, this is part of something which is much larger, but nonetheless, it really interests me, this particular comparison. And he also said something else at the end, and it wasn't Yaakov's manipulation with the maklot in terms of getting the animals to be whatever color they were going to be, rather as the angel, you know, as Yaakov then said over the angels, it was all part of a vision, and he understood that this is what's going to be, and it was essentially pick a card, and the card was going to be whatever number he picked. You pick this, fine, that's what it's going to be, and Yaakov was going to win this. Why? Because it's something which God had promised. There's obviously a larger process over here which is taking place, which Yaakov seems to understand as well. And let me say this now a little differently. If this is ultimately going to somehow be connected to Yetziat Mitzrayim, that's going to be interesting, but give me a couple of minutes to come back and to explain this. Which means, essentially, I could claim at this point that all the wealth that Yaakov gets is because the blessing that he was given really does come true. Look at all these kids that he has. Which means, did he expect to come back and have 12 kids at this point? He has 12 at this point, right? Including Dina, not including Binyamin. He has 12 kids at this point. Did he expect to, when he leaves, you know, when he crosses over the border, to have as much wealth as he has? Which means all of this which has taken place, you could look and say, oh, that blessing that he took actually has come to fruition. Or this has nothing to do with that, and that blessing doesn't come true, but this is rather something else. Maybe this is more connected to the neder that he made. Maybe once he made this neder and he says, you know, God, take care of me. And God says, okay, fine, I'll take care of you. Or maybe there's something else which is taking place. Let me go back to something, and which was towards, we dealt with a little bit last time, last week, but I want to now go a little bit deeper into it. In source 19, we have Rivka's response in telling Yaakov that he needs to dress up as Esav. For Rivka Amrel Yaakov ben Alimar, Hine Shamati, once again, she always seems to hear, Et Avich Medaber al Esav Echichalim, or Havia Litzayid, Vaseli Matamim, Vochela, Vavircha Lefnei Hashem, Lefnei Moti. So we spent a lot of time last week trying to figure out how she hears the words Lefnei Hashem when Yitzchak never said the words Lefnei Hashem. But the words Lefnei Hashem are very interesting to me, and I'll tell you why in a second. Lechna elatzon v'kachli misham shnei gdei izim tovim. And go bring for me two goats. By the way, it is interesting the goats did come into the story this week in terms of they were part of that experiment. In Bereishit Rabbah, it connects these two goats with the obvious connection of two goats. I mean, I mentioned this when I spoke on Friday night in shul, and somebody came over to me. Somebody was visiting somebody. And he seemed to be a Hasidic fellow with a long coat and the beard and the payas. And he comes over and he goes, "How can I never notice this? It's the most obvious thing in the world." And I said, "No, that's why I get the big bucks." As I point out, the obvious is that the obvious connection of two goats is Yaakov and Esav. The obvious thing about two goats is the Seir LaHashem and the Seir LaHazazel. The obvious connection is Yom Kippur. By the way, those words, Lefnei Hashem, are very Yom Kippur. That's a very Yom Kippur terminology where it says Lefnei Hashem Titaru. So the obvious thing, now you look at Bereishit Rabbah, it says Rivka said, you know, bring me these things. Sha'al yadan atayotel et abrachot. Why are these good? Because you're going to get a bracha from this. V'tovim levanecha sha'al yadanu mitchaper lam b'yom ha-kippurim. That in the future as well, that there's going to be this victory over the world of sin, the world of Esav, the world of the Satan, the world of whatever else you want to call it, but it's saying that this is really, in a certain sense, of Yaakov walking in, lefnai v'lefnim, into the inner sanctum where Yitzchak is seen as a, I don't know what word to use right now, I don't know if it's microcosm or if it's emotionally the same thing as the Kohen Gadol walking into the Kodesh HaKadoshim in order to save Am Yisrael. And that's what he wants to do. He wants to save Am Yisrael. What's he saying, Am Yisrael? From Esav getting all of this power. So therefore, he wants to now go in and save Am Yisrael. And that's what that's not me speaking now. That's the Medrash speaking over here saying that that when Rivka says that you're going to take these two goats, it's not just good for you. This is going to create that spiritual dynamic of a Yom Kippur in the future. So that's a really interesting Dvar Torah, and it's something that one should consider. But Rashi ignores it. Rashi in source 21, instead of taking, and I'll call it the obvious Midrash and Midrash Rabbah, Rashi instead writes, Shnei Gdei Izim, Ki Shnei Gdei Izim Hayam Achel Shi Yitzchak, is that what he normally ate? Ela, Echad Yikriv LePischo VeEchad Asam Mitamim. That one was for the Korban Pesach, the other, the Hadar Zakenim explains, the other was for the Korban Chagiga. That it's Pesach. So what in the world made Yaakov move from a beautiful Yom Kippur interpretation to go and say instead that it's a Pesach interpretation? And by the way, in the Vilna Gaon that I mentioned, he explains how both of them are interconnected, how both of these approaches are true. And Rav Tzadik HaKohen also writes about this. But nonetheless, this is really interesting that Rashi, I'm going to say again, he ignores what I'm calling the obvious, and instead he goes over. Now, we all know that Yitzchak is more connected to Pesach than he is connected to Yom Kippur. The reason why I say that is because Yitzchak, at least midrashically, is born on Pesach. The year before, right? The year before the angels come, it says next year at this time. So that's when Avram Sarah has the ugos. He says, "What are the ugos? Ugot matzot." Late, right? And that's where I have to befriend Lot with matzah because it's Pesach time. So Yitzchak, according to the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Yitzchak was born on Pesach. So Yitzchak saying, "I think I'm going to die." Maybe it's his birthday came, and maybe some people celebrate their birthday. And Yitzchak, "Oh, it's my birthday. I'm going to die." Why is he going to die? Maybe again he sees some sense of completion. He lives a long time afterwards. But nonetheless, Rashi prefers to move towards a Pesach narrative rather than a Yom Kippur narrative. Now, I want to go back for a moment. I'm going to go back and forth a couple times now, and we only have like 2 or 3 minutes left, but we'll go back and forth. One way of going back is that there's something interesting that Lavan says multiple times to Yaakov. And by the way, we never trust Lavan, but it could be that Lavan didn't understand the implications of it. In Source 24, when he meets him, Vayomer Lavan LeYaakov, Achi Ata, you're my brother. Okay, implications of that. Now Lavan is just using this as it's not just a turn of phrase. You're flesh and blood. Right, he's certainly saying this. Now you know Lavan's lying because Lavan's going to keep on lying about the wages. You're my flesh and blood. You're my brother. You know, how can I take advantage of you? Which, of course, Laban's going to take advantage of him. But his use of the word brother here is really interesting to me. Later on, by the end of the parasha, we get the same kind of thing. In source 25, Yanikov Yom Lavan, I was afraid. Imasher Timtsa, look at 26. Shalovan Kor Yaakov Ben Achoto Chiachi Ata. There are other times as well. Okay, I'm not giving you all of the times. By calling him his brother, do you realize what the implication of this is? When Yitzchak gave Yaakov the bracha, when he thought it was Esav, and said that you will be powerful over your brother, so guess what happens now? Lavan just now became a brother as well, and that blessing would have worked against Lavan. Who actually says that? That is Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky in source 26. V'chein matzinu, that's on the pasuk that you will be stronger than your brother. So v'chein matzinu shalavan kare liyakov ben achoto achi achiyata. So I'm going to say that again. That's really interesting, which means if I now want to say that the blessing that Yaakov got actually ends up working, it doesn't work in terms of Lavan, but it works, sorry, it doesn't work in terms of Esav necessarily, but it does work in terms of Lavan, and that's because Lavan opens his mouth, and again, you don't realize the power of the word. You know, you have on the one hand Yaakov making this neder, and maybe then it having all kinds of power to it, and you have on the other hand, you know, Lavan using the storyline, you know, achi, right? The English would be bro, right? And, oh, you're a brother, and now Yitzchak's a blessing, and now you start thinking even more than that. Maybe that's the emphasis exactly where Rivka says, okay, you know, you got this blessing, now go to my brother, right? And, right, also brothers. Yeah, now you want to know why he's so powerful at that point. Achi. Once it's Achi, once it's brother, now Yaakov is power, all that. And that's exactly the bracha of Yitzchak, and I'm getting a little carried away, and I know it. On the other hand, there's this other part that I wanted to stress. And as I said, I'm going in these multiple directions. I'm shooting in every direction. Correct, but he doesn't realize that as he's doing this, he actually spiritually just now damaged himself by using the word achi. It's at that point Yitzhak's blessing then could plug in. And no, I don't think he was trying deliberately to say that we're brothers and therefore you'll have power over me.
I agree.
So. One more thing now. As I said, I just want to go back the other way now. In source 27, we have, of course, the Brit Bein Abtarim. One of the things we're told about the Brit Bein Abtarim is V'achrechein yetzu b'rechush gadol. And you're going to then leave with great wealth. So if Yaakov's leaving Lavan is a microcosm of Am Yisrael leaving Egypt, you also need that microcosm of leaving b'rechush gadol in order to create what we normally have been calling through operation as Maasei Avot Simon Labanim. That again, it's the spiritual dynamic needs to be created in order for that spiritual dynamic to be repeated. So what I do want to point out is that when Yaakov does do whatever it is that he does, and it says he takes a makel, and he does whatever he does, if you look at source number 28, Targum Onkelos on that pasuk with the makel constantly translates makel as chutrin. Chutrin, chutraya, bechutraya. And in case you don't recognize that, they got the Chad Gadya for you on the bottom. And va'ata chutra. The chutra is Moshe's staff. The chutra is... So what's it called later on in Shemot? What's it called in Shemot when Aaron or Moshe, they take the staff? What's it called? What's the staff called? The mateh. So the mateh there, it's called a mateh, but it's a piece of wood. It's called a mateh. Over here, when you're talking about the shepherd's staff, over here it is called something else. But the Targum translated both as the same in the same way. So therefore, again, by the way, this was part of the Vilna Gaon's point that Yaakov's leaving and the miracles that takes place are facilitated by the chutra. Over there also, the miracles that take place are facilitated by the chutra. So essentially what I've given you is a number of different possibilities. Is as much as the beginning of the parasha, God is silent in terms of Yaakov's wealth, when we get to the end of the parasha, we suddenly find that Yaakov has wealth. So now, is this God helping an individual who's being taken advantage of? Again, a very isolated story, so that's one possibility. Is this the fulfillment of the blessing that Yaakov actually got from Yitzchak? And now, especially with that added point that Esau, that Lavan is an ach, that Lavan calls him a brother, and he's a brother, so now the blessing will work. Or is this a whole different dynamic, and maybe that sheds light on Rashi, whereby Rashi specifically wants to say, no, this is the Pesach story. He doesn't want to go to the Yom Kippur story. This is the Pesach story which is unfolding over here, and maybe that then helps us to understand that when Yaakov's actually going to leave, this is all really about getting back to this Maisa Avos Lema Banim, creating the dynamic of leaving Baruch Hu Shekadol.